Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 134 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her embryos. This is going to be an amazing segment. Before we start the segment, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review the podcast, because I'm just sitting here waiting to hear from you. I love, love, love your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life.
It's all about Her.
Wow, I've got a really unique segment for you out there in Her podcast land. You know, really thinking about this issue of what happens to extra embryos out there. What about embryo adoption? Have you ever even thought about that? Well, without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to two amazing young women who started up a whole movement around this. Their names are Katie Klein and Karis Boone. Katie and Karis, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Excited to talk to your audience.
Awesome. Now let's just get right to it. First, tell us why you put together this national registry for adoption around this whole issue of embryo adoption. This is such an amazing story because I know it starts with a personal story. Go right ahead.
Karis, I'll let you get started and then I'll finish up. That's how we started the business.
Well, this is Karis. Infertility was a big part of my journey. We did in vitro fertilization, but did not have any viable embryos. Our first daughter was adopted through traditional adoption and we loved it. But then we heard about embryo adoption and it was very intriguing to myself, and so I began the journey of trying to find embryos to adopt. I thought maybe there was a family out there that had been blessed in vitro fertilization with more embryos than they were going to use to grow their family, and maybe they would let us adopt them, transfer them, and give me a chance to be pregnant and carry my adopted child. Well, it was very difficult connecting with other families and finding embryos, but we finally were able to adopt embryos. We transferred them. I became pregnant on the first transfer, and 9 months later gave birth to my daughter, Zoe, which was an amazing experience, unbelievable time in our life. And through that journey, I was able to see that there were a lot of embryos out there that needed to be adopted, and there were a lot of families who wanted to adopt them, but there wasn't an easy way for them to connect apart from adoption agencies that at the time were charging $14,000 to $16,000 just to make the matches. So I went to my good friend Katie, who was on the other end of the spectrum. She had done in vitro fertilization and had been blessed with more embryos than she was going to use. And I said, you know, I'm a recipient. You're possibly going to be a donor. How can we make it easier for people to connect? And through that, the National Registry for Adoption, NRFA.org, was founded. And it's a matching website that allows people to connect easily. They can post profiles and message each other and eliminate the middleman in the whole situation.
Well, so to clarify this, you say that the traditional adoption agencies were charging $14,000, $16,000. So have you eliminated that? What happens now? I'm just thinking about all kinds of interesting pieces and steps. If one of my listeners out there in her podcast land is listening and saying, well, let's see now. First of all, do you sign the same kind of papers? Like, so the donor person is now signing away their rights to these, to that embryo, and this is now yours. Is, you know, is that taking place, number one, just sort of legal beagle? And the second is, you know, what does it really cost, you know, to do all of this?
Well, I'm happy to answer that. As a donor, it is free to donate. As a donor, you've probably, well, you have gone through the in vitro fertilization process, which is expensive, and you've had your children, and you're faced with the cost and decision of either storing your embryos, donating them to science, having them just flush down the toilet because you don't want to pay the storage fees anymore. And so on NRFA, and sometimes people have a hard time remembering that, so we just made a site called prebornkids.com. It'll make get you to the right place, prebornkids.com, and it's free to donate. You register like match.com, you put up a profile, and you're able to contact waiting families who we only charge a small monthly fee to be on the website. So when you say traditional adoption companies were charging $14 to $16, that was for agencies that would help you find embryos. And as Karis likes to point out, you know, embryos, even though that they're growing, they're genetically unique, it's just a chance at a child. And so to pay so much to an agency for a chance to be pregnant was just what we wanted to avoid. We wanted to make it inexpensive for waiting families to put up a profile. We offer a very inexpensive contract for $350. And the one larger expense is once you have your embryos and you want to implant them, you do have to pay an IVF clinic to do a frozen embryo transfer. And that depends on your state. In less expensive states, that might be $3,000. In more expensive states, that might be $5,000. So total, you could adopt embryos and in theory get pregnant and give birth to your adopted child for $5,000 or less, which is amazing.
Right, and it's a heck of a lot more cost effective. Karis, I'm curious, when you were having an issue and you definitely you know, wanted to become pregnant and all the rest of it, you said you, and I quote, heard about embryo adoption. How'd you hear about it?
That is an amazing story. I actually had a newborn at the time. My daughter, Jula, had just been adopted from a birth mother with a traditional adoption journey. And a friend of my father's that I barely knew mailed me a package that had a radio broadcast on it talking about embryo adoption. And so I popped it in my car and I was listening to it on the way to work one day. And by the time I got to work, I just had tears streaming down my face because I had gone through this whole process of trying to adopt a newborn in the United States. And we had had three birth mothers choose us and then decide not to place with us. They decided to go ahead and
Oh, that's got to be heartbreaking. Oh,
it was so difficult. And also with traditional adoption, for every newborn baby born in the United States, there's an estimated 28 families that are in line for that child. 28 families.
Oh, my God.
So with embryo adoption, both of those factors were changed for me. First of all, what I heard them saying was there were, at the time, 600,000 estimated embryos frozen in the United States. Now, not all of them were earmarked for adoption. Some of them were, you know, being held so that their the genetic families could continue to grow their families. But 600,000 embryos frozen, that an estimated, they're saying, between 20 and 40%, their families were done growing their families. And so they were waiting, essentially, for their families to pick an option for them. And the options at the time were they could be disposed of, they could be donated to science, or they could be donated to a waiting family. And so
I'm just blown away by the numbers. You know, you said 600,000?
And that was about 8 years ago that
Good
number
Lord,
was collected.
You know it's more now.
It's much more now. And that was just in the United States. That is not international. And so there's a lot of countries that do a lot of embryo storage. So worldwide, there's no telling how large that number could be.
Wow.
Well, let me just jump in here and say, Dr. Peek, we're just glad to be on the show because I feel that a reason a lot of embryos are still in storage is because people don't know that they can donate. We have donors who sometimes have 20 extra embryos. There's no way to have that many children. Or their doctors have said, you really can't be pregnant again. And so they care about those embryos. They wanted children. They've understood infertility. And they don't even know that there is a way to choose a family to give those embryos to.
I just think that this is huge, huge, and huge. And it really needs to get out there. It says that, you know, your personal story, Karis, of embryo adoption was featured on several national and local news outlets, including Good Housekeeping and CBS. Are you really making a big push to get it out in the media? Clearly today we're doing radio podcast media on iTunes, iHeart, and Radio MD, and we're getting the message out there. But I really think that this is an eye-opener that more and more people really need to be fully aware of. So what are you doing right now? What's your kind of, as it were, messaging marketing strategy?
Well, just to reemphasize what you just said, my life changed the day that someone shared the information about embryo adoption and donation with me. It wasn't a person that I had a deep relationship with. It was someone that knew I'd been struggling with infertility and failed adoptions and wanted to give me hope of a new option. And as we have begun sharing our stories, it blesses my heart immensely to hear the stories and have women contact me from all over the world saying, thank you so much for sharing your story. I didn't even know it was an option for me. And I have renewed hope where I didn't have any hope before. And so we are doing everything we can on social media, internet, marketing, stories, PR, just to get the word out there to give people a new hope. And even if your listeners are not impacted by infertility themselves, I would just encourage them to share through their networks, social media networks, because infertility is a very private issue. Most people don't discuss it publicly. So there's probably a lot of people in their networks that are struggling with this and that would like to know about it that they're not even aware of. Statistics say that 1 in 6 couples of childbearing age are dealing with infertility of some sort today in the United States.
Wow. Are you linked up with a lot of these groups? There's got to be a lot of, you know, online groups and support groups for people with infertility, et cetera. Have you made an active effort to really link up, partner, collaborate with any of these large groups? Because, you know, they're all over the place, both from medical websites and community websites. So what kind of interplay have you seen from there?
Well, we've had a lot of success. Go ahead, Katie.
Thank you. Karis and I have started some individual Facebook groups, just like I run one for donors only, and she runs one for adoption and donation groups. And those have grown from very small organizations to having hundreds and hundreds of women in those groups sharing their stories, their struggles, what did you do in this situation. We've also put together a little web page for your listeners if they want to go to prebornkids.com/her. Prebornkids.com/her. They can share this on Facebook or social media. Karis has written an amazing downloadable PDF book about embryo donation and adoption. A lot of people still have like questions about like, well, how does it actually happen? And what do the terms exactly mean? Your listeners can download that at no cost, you know, or they can sign up today if they've got some extra embryos or they want to try a new way to adopt.
What a fantastic resource. You know, because as a physician, I've listened to women in great pain. I mean, like serious pain, sitting back and saying, I just feel hopeless. It's a ridiculously hard journey. And, you know, they're feeling really down and defeated. This is really an extraordinary option and opportunity for women who are having issues with infertility to be able to avail themselves of embryos that are already, you know, in existence. And so there you have it. Question. So when you're looking at this whole issue of an embryo adoption, I'm really curious about this. How deeply do you delve into the parents, their background, all the rest of it? Do you find yourself in sort of the same position as if you were going to adopt, you know, the traditional route? How does that work?
Well, Karis, I'll let you compare it to the information you get with adoption, because I've never done that. But on our site, you can give as much or as little information as you want. So some families have written long stories, and I, as a donor myself, you can write about yourself, you can write your hobbies. We had pictures of our children and us and the activities we like to do, because we feel it's easier to connect and build a relationship if you realize, hey, we both love Diet Coke and throwing parties. Oh, our husbands both work in finance. You know, that's an easier way to develop a relationship than to just read, well, I'm 5'4 and have brown hair, and my husband is 5'10 and has brown hair. We allow users to put a lot of unique information about themselves so that they can make personal connections. Karis, do you want to comment on the amount of data you get versus a regular adoption?
A lot of
I'm very particularly interested about the medical end of it, and kind of you know, what kind of background, not just the parents but the grandparents, just sort of understanding a little bit more about the family, as it were. And then the other secondary piece is is there some kind of an agreement about whether or not you'll stay in contact? Like, what if the child, you know, grows up and, you know, at whatever point and says, I'd really like to link up and learn more about my biological parents? What do you think?
Let me quickly comment on your medical question, and then I'll let Karis get to the traditional versus regular.
Great.
When we donated, we're giving our embryos, our genetic material, to another family. And so what we did is we filled out a long form about our health history and our family health history. We also have a semi-open relationship. But we put in there, like, you know, Scott's father was this, my grandfather had that, and we just sent it over with the embryos. We also have a semi-open relationship, and so I see pictures on Facebook of the kids and Instagram. The mom and I text back and forth. So my family, all the babies came early. And so I texted her when she was pregnant, and I said, please tell your doctors to be really conscious that my grandmother, my mother, and I all have had premature children. And so there's definitely open communication there on medical issues if you'd like it. Now I'll turn it over to Karis and stop interrupting.
The feedback from each one of you is absolutely invaluable. So this is really cool. Now I'm curious about, you know, sort of the relationship going forward.
Well, I would say with the health issues, the amount of information you get and the relationship that you're going to have with traditional adoption, all three of those levels are unique to every adoption situation. So I actually, after I gave birth through embryo adoption, I adopted a third time from a birth mother. And I can tell you, all three of my children, I have different relationships with their genetic families, ranging from completely open, we go on vacation together, to almost closed, I've never met the birth mother. The amount of information I have on their genetic families, again, ranges from
basically know everything about their family, and I have access to relatives down to, with my son, our third adoption, I basically got no health information, and I still have almost no family history and medical information on him, and zero from his genetic father's side of the family. As far as contact goes, with all my kids, it's all different. With embryo adoption, the same as traditional adoption, it is up to the two parties involved, the embryo donors and the embryo recipients, as to what level of communication they feel comfortable with. Now, I'll tell you, when I began my embryo adoption journey, our embryo donors were not sure how they were going to feel once the child was born. And I understood that. How could they possibly look into the future and understand what their hearts were going to feel when I gave birth to a child from their genetic material? So I said, let's just play it by ear and figure it out as we go. I'm open to whatever you feel comfortable with. Now I would say our embryo donors are almost like family to us, extended family. We're very good friends. We get along very well. We have a high level of open communication, and we've just navigated the process as we've gone along. And so our legal contract specified that we would kind of determine what the relationship would be, but that we as embryo recipients were open to certain things. And they agreed to that as well. So it's very important to have a good legal contract that outlines these things and that goes through the different specifics as far as inheritance. You want to make sure that as an embryo donor someday, your inheritance you want to leave to the children you raised is not confused with the embryos you donated. As well as a recipient family, you need to have a good contract to make sure that if the child that you give birth to from embryo adoption ever needs a bone marrow transplant or some sort of medical need, that you have access to the genetic family. So at the National Registry for Adoption, we have had so much experience with helping people with these contracts that we... Now, offer the contract service for $350, which is a third of what most law firms will offer it for. And it'll walk you through very specific and detailed questions so that you, the embryo donors and recipients, can be on the same page about all these important issues.
I love it. You know, this is just such a fabulous service for everyone. Okay, so... all the listeners out there in the Her Podcast land, we have been talking to Katie Klein and Karis Boone. They are the founders of the National Registry for Adoption. We're talking about embryo adoption. There are two websites to go to for resources, support groups, more information. The first is NRFA, just like National Registry for Adoption, NFRA.org. The other one is preborn kids.com. Both of them will be able to avail you of all the information that you need should you be considering this. And really, quite frankly, hop on over to their Facebook page at NRFA.org and, you know, learn more about this expanding new option for women and couples, basically, who are facing infertility. This is just fabulous work. I must tell you, Katie and Karis, great job you're doing. It's such a service to our community. And thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast to share this really important message.
Well, thank you for having us. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Just keep it up is all I can say. And for all of you out there, remember to catch every episode of Her, including this really wonderful one we just finished. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. Now, right now, run on over to iTunes and rate and review this, because I read these rates and reviews. I want to know what your feedback is. More importantly, just love to hear from you. You know how that goes. So I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Please follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD because I'm tweeting this out all the time, and also on my Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek. You can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.